I'm Lee Whittinghill. I'm currently at Kentucky State University, and my specialty is urban agriculture. So I've been looking into some different aspects of urban agriculture. One of the things that I've been interested in is runoff water quality, and I'll explain a little bit how I came to that interest. But I started doing my research as a PhD student on green roofs and using green roofs for food production. Green roofs are a technology that can help with city sustainability. They can help mitigate urban heat island, retain stormwater, and also in some cases improve stormwater quality in the runoff. And more recently, people have been using them to grow food, especially in areas where ground space is extremely limited and competition for that space is very high. Often in these places, the rooftop space is very underutilized. So people are getting really creative. I had the opportunity to do a postdoc in New York City, where I worked with a full-scale rooftop farm, and we looked at runoff water quality on that farm and compared it to an ornamental green roof. And we saw that nutrient concentrations in the runoff were higher than the ornamental green roof. And this wasn't entirely unexpected, because most ornamental green roofs, especially extensive green roofs, which are generally shallow and have very low maintenance requirements, as you can see here, require only about 5 grams of nitrogen per meter squared. And when we compare that to vegetable requirements, so these requirements are for my home state, currently Kentucky, if you're looking at a mixed vegetable garden, it's almost 10 grams per meter squared. And if you're looking at more commercial production, it's upwards, can be as high as 22.4 grams per meter squared, depending on the plant you're looking at. So with this higher nutrient addition, we'd expect there to be more nutrients in the runoff. When I did that study, I also looked at some of the values in runoff from agricultural land from the literature, and the green roof that we looked at did have lower, was on the low end of some of that. So that was encouraging. So how did they supply that nutrient? Well, part of it was compost addition. So they're adding compost to the rooftop on an annual basis at a rate of about 0.64 kilograms per meter squared. That's relatively low if you think about recommendations for compost addition at a ground level. But green roofs have very low cation exchange capacity and have very low organic matter content. So even a little bit of an addition could have a relatively high impact. The rest of the nutrients they supplied were through a variety of organic fertilizers, so to make up the difference. We know from ornamental green roofs that fertilizer use, and especially soluble fertilizers, increases nutrients in runoff, and increasing organic matter content also increases new nutrients in runoff. And that's both if you compare media of the same age with different organic matter contents, but also if you add organic matter, such as compost, to an existing rooftop. We also know that concentrations in runoff decrease as roofs age. So this is, the organic matter breaks down over time. There's less to run off. It's either utilized or already run off. So one of the questions, some of these rooftop growers are really excited about adding compost, and sort of with the perspective that it might do a similar thing that we see in ground-level soils, building quality of, I can't say soil because this is an engineered media, but sort of building quality, increasing cation exchange capacity, increasing water holding capacity. If that happens on a rooftop, there's the potential to exceed the weight capacity of the roof. How long this would take, and if that's even the end result, we don't really know because there haven't been a lot of long-term studies. So what I've done is set up a study that has the potential to be very long-term to look at additions of compost over time. So we're using rooftop platforms, which is pretty typical in green roof research, because we can manipulate them. Most people who have green roofs don't really want you to do manipulative studies and destructive studies on their rooftops. They paid a lot of money for them, and they want them to look really good. So we're using a roof light green roof system, 2 inches of drainage layer with a filter fabric that's designed to keep the smaller particles of the media in the media and not clogging up your drainage. and then 8 inches of roof light intensive media. They're all equipped with a gutter, which you can see here. So there's a gap in the box with a screen that allows water to move through so we can collect it for analysis, which would work similar to a rooftop drain would function. So we are looking at a couple of different levels of compost addition based around that benchmark that was used by the actual rooftop farm. We also have an organic fertilizer mix control with no compost. In all cases, additional nutrients are being supplied by that same organic fertilizer mix. We also have some additional plots that have topsoil in them and are receiving the same organic fertilizer mix and no compost as a benchmark comparison for what would be happening on the ground. For the past 2 years, we've been planting them with a mix, a succession of greens, sort of doing a relay cropping technique. And the amount, the total amount of nutrients being supplied in all of these scenarios is matching recommendations for these greens from the College of Agriculture and Environmental Sciences at the University of Georgia. So they had specific recommendations for all of the greens that we chose, and then we sort of created a single application rate from those recommendations. Our local recommendations for greens are very generalized and don't include all of the ones that we were including in our study. So at the start of our study in May 2016, we added the first compost addition and then added that fertilizer, the additional fertilizer with each planting. In 2019, we were able to start at the beginning of our growing season in April and had the second addition of compost. We haven't made it quite through the whole year yet. We've got these later fertilizer additions and plantings are planned. So once a month, we collect runoff water, weather permitting. So far, we haven't missed, we've only missed 2 months from the start of the study. About 250 milliliters, and then we take that back to the lab and analyze it for pH, conductivity, turbidity, color, nitrate, nitrogen, ammonia, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. We have done analysis using R and performed an ANOVA with fertilizer treatment and sample month in our model. I included sample month because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't missing some variation, seasonal variation, which I might expect, especially if we have times of year when there are no plants in the ground and we're not fertilizing. This is similar to the analysis that I performed on the rooftop farm. So what I found so far is pretty complicated, actually. pH, conductivity, ammonia, and nitrate, nitrogen, and potassium didn't have significant interactions between the fertilizer treatment and month. Many of them also do not have any significant difference between our fertilizer treatments in the green roof plots. Most of the differences that I've seen are between the green roof plots and our topsoil comparison point. Turbidity, color, and phosphorus did have interactions, but if we look at differences within fertilizer treatment between months, they show similar patterns, and if we look at differences within months between fertilizer treatments, there also aren't any differences between our fertilizer treatments. So this is what that sort of looks like. For nitrogen and ammonia, I'm using these as examples. What we have seen is that the topsoil numbers are actually, when they are significantly different, are lower than the green roof, which is not what I would have expected given what I found from the previous study, that runoff values from that roof were at the low end. You can also kind of see here what makes this analysis kind of complicated. I have some statistical outliers that are fairly far from the rest of the range of the group. I've been trying to figure out, think about how to deal with those in my analysis. For most of them, I don't suspect that somebody transcribed a number incorrectly, which makes that a little bit more complicated. When looking at the differences between months, there are a couple of patterns that have emerged. For most of them, so we have Here's pH, conductivity, and ammonia nitrogen. For most of them, we see higher numbers, higher values during the growing season when we have plants in the ground and we're adding fertilizer, and then a decrease during those winter months. The only exception for that is the phosphorus, which appears to have higher values during the winter months so far. So I have a couple of concerns, one being that our compost has very low nutrient concentrations. And so most of the nutrients that are in the systems are coming from the fertilizer. And that may mean that our fertilizer additions are sort of masking any effects from the compost. And I'm trying to decide what to do about that, especially given that it's a long-term study. And if we make some changes, that might change things moving forward. Another thing that I've been thinking about is the timing of when we took those samples in relation to when we had fertilizer, we put in fertilizer, and when plants were in the system. So I've taken a little bit of time to look at what else might need to be added to the model to really correctly reflect what's actually going on in the system. And that would include the time since the compost has been applied. So starting at year one, compost was applied in May. The farther away we get from that, there might be differences. And then after the second compost addition, I might expect to see a spike and then a decrease. And the time since the fertilizer was applied. Another thing that I haven't quite added yet but want to is the amount of rainfall since the fertilizer was applied. Because we know that fertilizers do run off rooftops, if there was a situation where there was more rainfall before we got out there to collect than in another month, that might have more of an impact on what we're actually seeing in the runoff. Usually we do collect the first large enough rainstorm to have enough runoff to run the analysis, but that isn't always the case. And I also want to look at interactions between those. And what I have found so far in my rough first steps of that is that the time since the compost was applied and the time since the fertilizer was applied actually have a very important role in the model. And I'm going to be looking at that some more. So I need to thank my funding, also from the Evans Allen grant through USDA NIFA, my study team, which has sort of evolved over time. I had some graduate students and student helpers, and then additional help when we're harvesting and planting each crop, which takes a lot of time. And I can answer any questions if you've, I think we've got a little bit of time. And
One question.
What exactly was your compost source?
So we were using, actually.
Sorry, I guess I should be more specific. Was it just a combination of the three you listed? Or was
no, so the compost is a Michigan Peat Garden Magic compost and manure. It's a commercially available compost. That we were lucky, it has a nutrient analysis that comes along with it. But as you can see here, it's 0.1% nitrogen, so really low. I think, so one of the things I'm considering is maybe trying to find a available compost that has higher known nutrient concentration. Unfortunately, I don't know the nutrient concentration of the compost that was being used by the actual rooftop. Yeah, and I'm still trying to publish some of that research, and you know, reviewers have questions like, well, how much irrigation did they put down? They didn't keep track, so I don't know. But that's some of the quirks of working with farmers, I guess. Yep. So currently, the graphs that I showed in the analysis that I explained did include all of the outliers. Like I said, I went through and I made sure that those outliers weren't transposition errors. None of them, I didn't flag any of them for something went wrong in the lab. So right now they are all included. For a couple of them, I did look at taking them out and to see what would happen, and the patterns in the statistic, what's statistically different, remained the same. But
okay, that's it.